Welcome to Create Your Bliss with Nika Annan. Today we have the wonderful opportunity to talk to Eileen McCusick, who is a sound therapist and wellness educator. Eileen McCusick is a researcher, a writer, educator, and practitioner who has been studying the effects of audible sound on the human body since 1996. She is the originator of biofield tuning, formerly called sound balancing, a unique therapeutic method utilizing tuning forks, and the author of a wonderful book called Tuning the Human Biofield, Healing with Vibrational Sound, from Healing Arts Press. She combines her background in wellness and business to form a practical, grounded, logical-based approach to understanding and explaining how and why sound works therapeutically. She maintains a sound therapy practice in Vermont, where she treats clients with both in-person and distant sessions. She also travels to teach and speak at conferences, so I'd like to welcome Eileen McCusick and say, Eileen, please tell us about what you do. Sound is such an amazing part of our lives.
It is an amazing part, and it's kind of surprisingly overlooked in our culture, you know, both for its power to heal and also how it harms us. So, you know, sound can be either creative or destructive, depending on how we experience it and how it's applied. And back in 1996, when I started using tuning forks, you know, it was pretty far out back then.
Yes, it was pretty, what are you doing?
Yeah. And actually, it seemed like that for a long time. I think in the last few years, the climate has changed. Like, it's becoming more popular. There's a lot of people are using singing bowls and gongs and you know, certainly everybody understands the power of music. You know, most people use music therapeutically. You know, they're already making use of sound healing in their lives. They just don't tend to think of it that way.
Right.
So, you know, when we get into the use of things like bowls or tuning forks, we're being a little more intentional. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty much the same principle. You know, sound really, it moves us, and it can move us. You know, in healing, the intention is for sound to take you from, you know, an agitated or upset or in pain or stressed kind of frame of mind into a peaceful, present, relaxed, aware state of mind. You know, and that's the kind of place we want to live from, right? So the more we're exposed to sound, the more we're brought to that place. And that's health. That's healing.
Yes, a sense of wholeness.
A sense of wholeness, yeah, and presence. So what I do is I use tuning forks. I have a set of four different tuning forks that I use. I've whittled it down over the years. You know, at one point I used up to 30 or more tuning forks in a session. Yeah. And then I discovered that I could actually do more with less. And so I use two weighted forks, which are the kinds of forks that you activate them. They've got barrels on the ends. And when you activate them, you place the handle on the body. So, you know, there's a school called Accutonics, mm-hmm. where they use just primarily these weighted forks, and they use them on acupuncture points. So, you know, some people may have been exposed to tuning forks before through that practice. And then I use two unweighted forks, and these are the ones, you know, that the doctor might have you test your hearing, listening to that kind of a tuning fork. And I use those in the body's field. And when I started off using tuning forks, I just used the unweighted ones, and I just held them directly over the body. They came as like a chakra tuning set, my first set of tuning forks. And you were supposed to use the note of C over the root chakra and D over the second chakra and so on up to B over the crown. And so that's what I did. And for many years, I just worked close to the body. But then after, I think in maybe 2006, I made a discovery that completely changed my whole experience with the tuning forks. And it took it from being a hobby to actually really becoming my full-time vocation. And that was the discovery of that there is this field that surrounds the human body. And we might, in esoteric literature, call it the human energy field or the aura. Mm-hmm. From from a scientific perspective, the term is biofield. And because I really struggled with people being skeptical about this work, I really wanted to be able to understand it and explain it from with a language that was scientifically acceptable, right? Being raised in a secular education, you know, and I started to become really curious about it from a scientific perspective. And so the reason why I discovered things in the energy field has to do with basically the belief that the field that surrounds your body, this aura or energy, it's a biomagnetic medium. You know, it's just like a diffuse magnetic fluid. And what we call subtle energy is just a diffuse magnetic fluid. But what I observed through my work was that this appeared to really be what we would call mind. So that our mind, you know, Western thinking has us placing the mind inside the body. But really what I've discovered through this work is that the body is inside the mind. And it's a completely radical and different way of looking at things. And so what I've done over the years, especially since I've been working out in the field, is I've been combing my tuning forks through this magnetic, you know, this diffuse magnetic medium and using the sound like sonar and bouncing it off of the field and the body and listening to the feedback. And I've discovered that the field actually has a specific anatomy, that it's like different areas are literally holding the information and memories related to different states of mind, different emotions, different relationships. There's all kinds of interesting features of the landscape that I've discovered. There's a structure I call the ancestral river that runs about 10 inches off the right and left sides that holds what I call the energetic song of our ancestors, the emotional states and feeling plate, you know, the inner landscape of our ancestors and how that gets passed down in our vibrational field and really influences us far more than we realize. I've also discovered a structure I call the hamster wheel of worry, which is about 8 inches off of the left side of your head. And when you worry, when you lie in bed at night at like 3 a.m. and you can't stop your mind, you're actually animating this particular area of your biofield. So and many, many more things besides, like there are actual fixed points in your field that hold the energy of your mother and your father. And the mother is on the left side of the body and the father is on the right side. And just by, you know, bouncing the sound off and listening to the unique frequency signatures of these different areas, I've learned that there's a particular language there. Like, and I hear it in the overtones of the tuning forks, like sadness, where all the sad memories are stored off our left shoulder, for example, up the left side of the heart chakra. And when I pass the tuning forks through that area, they sound sad. So, and it's really evident, like when I teach classes, people can immediately tell when we're listening carefully and we hear the tones change, like what emotions they are reflecting. So in addition to the field being compartmentalized or stratified with like these different emotional states inhabiting different levels, it also appears to be timelined. And what I mean by that is that as we go through our days and we have our experiences on a physical, mental, and emotional levels, it's like we're continually generating like this EEG readout of waveforms out into our field that gets laid down in these sort of standing waves. And so as we generate information, it moves away from us. So when I'm combing through the field and I'm listening for the information I find close to the body is current or recently generated, whereas gestation, birth, and earliest childhood are all at the outer ring.
Excuse me.
Yeah, are you okay?
Yeah. Keep going.
Okay.
Okay.
So when I pass the tuning forks, you know, through these particular structures, and I hit, let's say I hit an area where there's a lot of chaos in the overtones, then I will look to see at what age it was generated and in what zone it is. So it's an equidistant from our body to the edge of the field. So if somebody's 40, halfway to the edge of their field is about 20. So if I'm moving the tuning forks through the area related to sadness and I hit a lot of chaos and resistance in the field halfway through, that lets me know that that person went through something that was very sad at that time. And I'll say to them, so, you know, what happened when you were 20 that was really sad? And they'll say something like, oh, you know, that was when my grandmother who raised me died, right? So something. It's all, everything is recorded. And so what's really neat about biofield tuning is that anybody can really learn to do it. You know, anybody who's interested in the healing arts or that sort of thing. It's a very, very simple method of just combing the tuning forks very slowly through the field and listening and feeling for places where you encounter static or distortion, and then staying in that place, which basically allows the body to recognize its imbalance, and it can actually tune itself to that coherent input. So the body, given a coherent input in a historically incoherent area, will use that opportunity to like pretty much autocorrect to whatever degree it can. So it supports the body in like getting the static out of the signal in the electromagnetic vibrational strata of the being, which is foundational, which is really mind. So, you know, what we're stuck in is a paradigm where we're just treating the symptoms in the body and we're not recognizing that there's an electromagnetic historic vibrational pattern that underlies that, that's giving rise to the distortion in the body. So what the sound does is it both locates, it detects and corrects these areas of noise and helps to improve like the signal to noise ratio in the operating system, you know, the mind, basically. And then when you fix that, you're fixing the blueprint, then the body just fixes itself. So it's a really simple, elegant, effective, non-invasive way of relieving stress. So that's what I do. And so I practice it and I teach it. And I've just started doing group distance sessions of all things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how do those work?
Well, the reason why those came into being was I discovered a number of years ago that I could do this work at a distance. And I didn't think that I could because I was using the physics principles of resonance and entrainment and working on physical bodies. And how on earth would I do that at a distance? Like, it seemed very implausible to me. But I was persuaded by a mentor to try it on him. So he was in California and I was in Vermont, and he pretended he was on my table and I pretended he was on my table. And when I approached the table with my tuning forks, I was very surprised to discover that the patterns of distortion and imbalance that I'm able to locate when somebody is in the room actually appeared. And I was able to both correctly diagnose him. So I have a high level of accuracy when I go through the field because it isn't psychic, it isn't intuitive, it's really math. It's patterns and,
right.
and
right.
you know, arrangements. It's like a language. It sounds like a binary language. And there's nothing woo-woo about it. You know, it's just what's going on in this sort of environment around the body. So, but, you know, having it show up at, you know, in my treatment room, so not only was I able to read him correctly, but I was also able to create a state change in him. He noticed a pain that he had diminished. And he definitely felt different after the session. So that was pretty wild. So then I started doing more of those, and I've done quite a number over the last few years, especially since my book came out. I've had a lot of demand for these distance sessions. I've been treating people all over the world. But a lot of my clients are women in their 60s, and what I've discovered in this population is they all seem to have the same set of problems. And it's a very kind of unique perspective that I have, because I'm able to read people's fields from gestation to now. And so I can discern information and states that happened to them in their precognitive state, like, you know, what happened in infancy, for example, or the first 3 years of your life, which are so formative, and a lot of us don't really know, or in therapy can't get back, you know, to right. those places. So I'm able to get in there and not only like read it, but also help to shift the pattern that's there. So what I discovered in this particular group of people who were born, the baby boomers, people who were born post-World War II, their parents had PTSD from World War II. Mm. They managed that by drinking, smoking, and taking Valiums. They were the first generation of babies who were bottle fed. So they had moms who were like drinking and smoking and popping Valiums and giving them formula on a schedule. And so they ended up really frustrated over their unmet needs. They ended up believing that there was something wrong with them, that they weren't worthy of love because they failed to attach well to their mothers and to their fathers too, who are like, you know, drunk and gone. And so, that made them sad. And then because they believed that their needs weren't important, they ended up taking care of everybody else. And then they had a lifetime of digestive disorders too, because of, an important part of mother's milk is that it seeds the digestive tract with the necessary bacteria in order to create a healthy, effective digestive environment. So minus those essential nutrients, and given, like, a lot of people were given Karo and corn syrup and all kinds condensed milk. So basically, a lot of these people end up with sugar addictions too, you know, and then they struggle with their weight because they struggle with sugar or wine. So now here they get to their 60s and they want to break out of these patterns and they want to move forward and they want to, like, you know, claim their lives, but they're all stuck because they've had this sort of lifetime pattern thing. So I kept seeing that same pattern like over and over and over and over again. And for me, I really like discovery. This has been such a neat journey, sort of mapping this field and learning this whole new language of sound. I like experiments, and I like, I'm actually in a PhD program right now. So I was getting getting boring. So I came up with the idea. I'm like, maybe I could save time and treat a whole bunch of them all at once. So I came up with this idea on a Thursday, and I posted it on my Facebook page. I have a Facebook sound therapy page, and decided to do it on, I think it was a Sunday. And so I had 140 people sign up in just a few days.
Wow.
Yeah. and they had to fit that parameter, you know, like you had to be a woman, you know, like baby boomer, and they just came out of the woodwork for it. So I did that one, which was just completely fascinating to have 140 distant bodies on my table. And what happened in that was really wild. The room got really hot. So
in your room, at your place,
as I was doing, you know, working on these energy bodies and moving energy around, and it's a kind of a process of centering, combing energy like through the field and then bringing it into the neutral midline or the chakra system. And I call those adjustments. So every time I did an adjustment, this wave of heat came into the room. So that was really wild. And then we had this really amazing thing happen when I was working on everybody's heart chakra. Prior to I got to the heart, it felt like I was working on 140 different people. And when I got to the heart and I made the heart adjustment, the whole energy in the room completely changed. It went from being in a low pressure system to like being in a high pressure system. And I looked at the clock and it was 7:44. And I just noted that. And then when I finished up at 8 o'clock, because it was a Facebook event, people were writing their experiences on the wall. And a whole bunch of people really felt that big shift, you know, like 45 minutes in. So, and they weren't connected to me in any way other than through the ethers. So that was pretty wild to know that we could connect with, you know, all of these people at a distance and kind of have a shared experience. So then I did another one, and that one we did with a phone in, and people were actually able to like listen to me going through the session. And one of the things that happened there that was really remarkable was I was working in the area of the right knee, which holds information related to struggling against obstacles as we try to move forward. And I hit this place that was like this insurmountable kind of obstacle was what it felt like. And so I said to everybody, there were 115 people who had actually called in, but there were over 200 people who were actually participating. So I said to the people who were listening, this is a really insurmountable obstacle that nobody can do by themselves. So why don't you all help each other over it? And the energy shifted right away. I mean, it just moved like in an instant. And it was so amazing to
love that.
Yeah, to witness that, right? And then there was another place in the field too. We're in the area that relates to guilt and shame, which is the second chakra on the right side holds, you know, at least to my observation through this work, because I know there are a number of different systems that say different emotions are in different parts of the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I want to just kind of quantify this just by saying, like, I haven't scientifically documented this. It's completely my own perception, you know, this observation of this pattern. So it's hypothetical. But anyway, hypothetically, guilt and shame sort of live in this particular area. And so I was working in that, and I came across this structure that felt like an anchor that everyone was dragging around, this anchor of like not good enough, you know, low self-worth, that whole sort of self-shame that stops us from really being able to just love ourselves. And I asked everyone to help each other to sort of heave that energy so that we can move it and shift it and center it into our beings and turn it into a more balanced expression of energy, you know, rather than this miserable, heavy guilt thing we're all dragging around. And that moved instantly too. And so that was just so neat to witness. And then after I finished up with them, I sent out a email questionnaire saying, you know, what was your experience during the session? How did you feel after? And how did you feel when I asked you to help everybody? And the stories that I got back, again, were really just amazing. People's experiences, people really felt energy moving in their body, and they really felt energy moving when it was time to help, or they had these really just interesting inner experiences. And I had set the intention that people would feel grounded, calm, and peaceful as a consequence of receiving this work. And that is absolutely what people reported feeling. You know, I got some incredible stories from people about just their profound sense of connection. And so it made me realize that working in groups is actually very powerful, because there's this way to sort of harness and coordinate the group energy, you know, in the ethers, that's very real and very tangible and so interesting to see correlated, you know, with everybody who participated having very similar experiences and outcomes. So even though it's really far-fetched, I mean, the whole idea of doing distant group tuning for healing, you know, because it just sounds really fruity, but for those of us who've been experiencing it, for me who's been witnessing it, there's something really there. And so I'm doing one more experiment, and then I'm going to start to offer a program through my website that people can sign up for receiving this, as a monthly thing. But this next experiment, I've turned it into an independent study for my PhD. I'm going to the California Institute for Human Science in Encinitas, which is a unique school that's set up to study subtle energy, but from a very rigorous academic and scientific perspective. And, you know, whether you have an energy field, if it exists, what it all means is really right at the boundary between what we call alternative and what we call conventional, right? Mm-hmm. Conventional Western science doesn't really acknowledge that this field exists, you know. Most people don't believe that it exists, But the magnetic field of the body has been measured for decades. You know, they invented a device called the squid magnetometer back in the late 60s that's actually so sensitive that it's measured the magnetic field of the body up to 12 feet away. So, you know, this sort of notion that a lot of people walk around with that it's never been measured, it just isn't even true. Like, it has been, you know, and even if you, like, even if you just call it magnetism, you know, magnetic information can be stored magnetically, right? So it's, right. And information can be stored in waves. So the fact that we have this magnetic medium with standing waves is completely logical based on what we know about information storage. So it's really not, and there's nothing quantum about it, you know, it's like, it's just math and waves. But anyway, I'm going to be, through that school, I'm going to be conducting one final experiment in what's called a Faraday cage. It's a room that's made completely of copper and it's electromagnetically shielded. It's light proof and it's soundproof and it's temperature controlled. And it has what's called a biophoton counter in it, which is an incredibly sensitive device that will count actual single photons of light. So I'll be conducting my next group experiment in that room, and we'll be taking the temperature, you know, obviously the beginning and through it, and tracking the temperature. We're going to be tracking the photon count. So previously, when distance healing sessions have been conducted in these light-proof rooms with biophoton counters, they have recorded bursts of biophotons. However, these previous studies were only conducted with like healing one person at a time. I'm actually going to have hundreds of people's Wow. light bodies in that room with me. So I'm really curious to see, you know, applying science to this equation and seeing what we get, you know, so it'll be really interesting either way. So I'm really looking forward to conducting that and seeing what happens and then being able to share that with people.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Really quite fascinating, because I think that there is enormous amount that we haven't really paid attention to in our culture about what happens with energy fields when people are in a group.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in so many indigenous cultures, part of how they keep their community whole is by singing and dancing together.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just having that conversation yesterday about how, you know, as humans, I think we're really meant to sing and dance, you know, and how it's so healthy. I was telling someone the story about how studies have been done where they've taken immune markers, biomarkers is what I'm trying to say, before and after people have sung in groups. So choir rehearsals and then performances. And we get a huge immune boost from singing together with other people and dancing. You know, it's really been lost. And then we just sit in front of the TV and watch other people do it, you know, and it's it brings coherence to the group, right? And to yourself, to your own intercellular communication.
And so you just, I love that these experiments are really about how do we use intention when we're in that group to transform the energy field. How amazing is that? And what a phenomenal thing to explore for healing PTSD.
Yeah, PTSD, you know, really any number of things. So that's what I'm going to do as far as when I start the program in July, I'm going to do it in 3-week modules. So we'll have 3 weeks around maybe depression, sadness, and loss. And then maybe 3 weeks around something like PTSD and anxiety and insomnia, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's each one of these sort of symptoms have very specific areas in the field where the distortions that relate to it lie. So, you know, PTSD is very much on either side of the head. And there's just tremendous amounts of static and noise in the field around the brain. And so it's a very simple process of just coming in very, very slowly through those brain waves and relaxing them, helping them to settle down out of that sort of stressed, excited state. And it's, you know, it's very profound and it's so neat that it can be done at a distance.
That's amazing. And I know that one of the things that they're talking about for veterans coming back from Afghanistan and the Iraq conflicts is that they have traumatic brain injury from sound.
Yeah, that's right. They do because of explosions and And so sound is the antidote, you know? It really is. And it's so simple.
So I didn't prepare you for this, so this is a spontaneous question and you can say no, but would you be interested in sounding some of your forks and maybe using me to demo something for a few minutes for our listening audience?
Sure, we can try that. Do you have
Okay.
anything going on specifically that you want to address?
Well, let's do the right knee, stepping into the
Yeah. And anybody else who's listening or who tunes into this, if you've got a right knee issue going on, you can project your awareness into a receptive place and, you know, see what you notice while we work on your knee. Okay,
And I'd
so
like, can I add a little caveat to this?
yeah,
I'd
absolutely.
like to ask listeners who, because it will be recorded, if you have an experience of a recording of this, please let Eileen and myself know because that would be really fascinating.
Yeah, well, we actually did that. So in my second
Oh,
experiment,
cool.
he recorded it, and people were able to listen to the recording after the fact, and they absolutely noticed energy moving and felt a shift from it. So, you know, because we're working in the ether, and anything that happens gets recorded in the etheric medium. You know, you might also call it the source field or the Akashic record, or some people might call it God. It's the field, or you know, actually the Higgs field that the Higgs boson arises from, allegedly, is described in very much the same way as a field that's present everywhere all at once. And you know, it's a classical concept, the ether, but it was removed from our cosmology in the early 1900s. And it was replaced with the vacuum, which is nothing. So the ether, which was this sort of like present everywhere, connecting all at once, memory keeping medium, was completely removed and nothing took its place. And so because the ether is holographic in nature, meaning because it's all one thing, all of the information that's present in it is present anywhere in it. And so I can pluck your right knee out of the ether. The vibrational patterning that comprises your right knee can be, through intention, drawn out of the etheric medium and placed here in my room in Vermont.
I just find this so fascinating. I went to the SANS with the Science and Non-Duality Conference in San Jose last year, and its focus was on entanglement, and that's basically what they were talking about, is that due to that, there is a way for us to participate in the world outside of space and time.
Right. And so, you know, a lot of the, so that's, yes, quantum entanglement is the other way of trying to describe this particular process. I personally don't use the term quantum. And the reason I don't is because it's controversial. Because people who are true quantum mechanics really get a bee in their bonnet over new age people talking about quantum, blah, blah, blah. And there's just a lot of cantankerous disagreement around what it all even means. Do you know what I mean? So
Yes.
we don't
This
have.
conference is very exciting because it's physicists talking about this. So actually,
Right.
it's a really cool, but not all physicists are interested in that level of
Right. There's a certain group who are. And part of the reason why it's challenging is because of consciousness. Because you can't take consciousness out of the equation. And hard scientists have been conditioned to take consciousness out of the equation. So, you know, when you get into, you know, it's, Einstein called it spooky action at a distance. I personally think that ether theory makes way more sense and it's much simpler. You know, it's just there's, you don't have to get into quantum arguments. It's just like, this
It's
is what the
there.
ether is. This is what the ether does. You know, these are the properties of the ether.
And we can
And
all experience it.
Yeah, and everybody has had the experience of connecting through the ethers. Everybody's gotten a vibe or thought of a friend and then seen them, and you know, known when your husband is texting you. I mean, it all acts in resonance too. So, you know, real-time instantaneous communication is possible through the ether, and there's nothing woo-woo about it. It's just it's the nature of nature. So, yeah, so I don't go to quantum, but it is the same idea. Good. Okay, so are we ready to do some tuning forks on your knee then?
We are ready.
Okay, so I have in my hand 174 hertz tuning fork, and I'm going to use my mind to project your knee into a pretty accessible spot here.
Okay.
Where hopefully you can still hear the tuning fork. So I'm going to find the edge of your biofield of your knee, and then I'm going to work my way. I'm going to comb in towards it. It's about a 5-foot journey from the outer edge of your knee to the outer edge of your field. All right. So right off the bat, there's at the outer edge of your field, there's a pretty intense, tight frequency there, which is usually a sign that somebody had a kind of a stressful birth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know your birth story?
So what I do know about my birth story is I was 3.5 weeks late. My mother was in labor for an hour. It was natural childbirth, but I did end up in an incubator for some reason, and I don't know why.
Really? After being 3.5 weeks late?
So I don't know why they put me in there.
That's interesting. Well, so incubator babies definitely have, you know, depending on the duration of the stay in the incubator, what I found in that particular group of people is a struggle to attach well to others. There's always this sense that people are inaccessible or they're like kind of behind mm-hmm. some kind of construct. And so most people that I know that I've worked with who've been in incubators, have a sort of lasting impression in their psyche that really gets in the way of good, healthy, successful relationships or attachments.
Mm-hmm. That fits.
Yeah.
I don't think it was for very long. I don't know.
I would imagine it probably wasn't for very long. So does your right knee hurt?
It's a little swollen, and there's some pain coming up from it. And it's I had surgery in my right foot recently, and it just feels a little unreliable mm-hmm. and swollen.
So, you know, if you were born almost a month late, I mean, that's really late. That's a habit of staying in places longer than maybe you should.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, feeling like, you might be in a place right now where you just really need to grow. You need to get outside your comfort zone and expand.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just feeling really maybe stuck or not quite able to, like you need some kind of boost or push, to help you to kind of level up in a way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm looking at, well, first I have the trying to envision how to do the coaching and this wonderful radio show. And then I have a day job that's very different and how to balance all that.
Yeah. You know, it usually involves some kind of leap of faith. That's what I found in my life.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, what's really neat about this work is especially with regards to right knees, that when we clean up the energy field and we get stuff, you know, I asked my kids, I talk about my kids a lot in my mm-hmm. book. Did you read the book? Was that?
I've read pieces of it. I have not read it through, which is, I'm sorry to say, but so I would get it and get totally involved and then move on.
But so, well, you'll come across, you know, when you do get into other parts of it, I talk about my kids a lot because they've been a really interesting part of my journey. And, oh, now we're getting into some interesting stuff right here in your knee.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked my son when he was 6, you know, what's happening when I do this work? And he said, it's taking energy from where it doesn't belong and putting it where it does belong so it can get to work doing what it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And yeah. And so when you've got a lot of energy stuck around the outside of your knee, it's not flowing. It's not circulating. It's just kind of eddying and locked up. And so that's how it is. You're locked up energetically, like right inside and just the outside of your knee. In fact, your joint, it feels compressed to me. So the foot surgery, however you were walking before or maybe after is actually starting to throw your joint off in your knee a little bit.
Well, I think a lot before. And now what happened is they fused my big toe joint. So I have to walk differently.
You have to walk differently. Okay. So what that's doing is it's throwing your tibia back up on a slightly sideways angle. So okay. It's coming into your joint in the slight, ever so slightly wrong direction. And it's creating compression in the outer side of that joint.
Okay.
So I can hear and see that. So you know how they use sound, like ultrasound, right? To see the insides, right? So I'm listening to this vibrational information. It creates an image in my mind, like a, you know, like an ultrasound, you know, screen.
Right.
And so I'm able to listen to the sound and actually sort of have a sort of X-ray vision into, especially bones. Like it's pretty easy for me to see, how joints might be misaligned or vertebrae might be subluxated or ribs might be out, that sort of thing. So I can use the sound, you know, both to sort of determine what's going on, but I can also manipulate that frequency pattern field, right? So if you think about it, I'm playing with the blueprint that is underlying that joint.
Uh-huh.
Shifting the tonal quality of it, the binary patterning that creates a slight adjustment to it, you know, to the degree that it can be. So it's helping to open up space in that joint that is compressed.
I can feel it. Actually, I can feel on the inside of the knee and the toe, there's energy shifting in both those places.
Yep. Yeah, so that sounds a lot better now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also worked on that part of your mind, you know, which was feeling a little stuck and a little jacked up around being stuck. And now it's created some space in there. And into that space, other ideas and information can flow. So it opens you up to other potentials.
That's so exciting. And it's so fabulous because it's really interesting to have the experience of the sound because I find that the body responds with such wisdom and so immediately is not the right word, but that there, you know, it does not have to, which we seem to think in our culture, be run through the mind and the intellect. And
yeah, no, it doesn't.
But it doesn't need to go there.
Because it's all mind. I mean, that's the thing about sound, right? Is that mind is really just patterns of frequency and vibration. You know, we put words on it, but really it's just patterns.
Right.
So, you know, so when we're actually getting in there with the sound and we're working directly on a pattern, we are working on mind. We're not working on the part of the mind that's using words, right?
Right.
But all of mind is just vibration. And yes. Yeah, and I guess coming back to this perception of seeing it as binary, it's all just patterning.
Right. And I love what you said about the body is inside the mind. So the body is contained by the mind, which is wonderful. So if you harmonize the mind.
Yeah, that's right.
And the body moves into alignment. That's really.
It's the opposite of what we all think. I also think that thunder creates lightning. Most people think it's the other way around. But, you know, in the beginning was the word. And, you know, the word was God. And God said, let there be light, which means that sound preceded light.
That's really fascinating. Because I remember I was sitting up on the edge of a mountain about, it was probably up about 9,000 feet, and I'm sitting on the edge of a cliff that then it falls away. It's like the cliff's probably 1,500, 2,000 feet down, and I'm sitting under this huge piñon tree, and there's this big cloud above me, and I can feel like all this energy moving around in it. And all of a sudden, there's this sound, and then lightning comes out from it laterally.
Yeah, the sound came first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's the energy, you know, kind of gearing up, and then the energy discharges, boom, mm-hmm. and discharge creates the spark.
Yeah, yeah, so it's the sound. The sound mm-hmm. flowing. So the other thing I wanted to get you to talk about is the energetics, because I love that phrase. And I think it's so important, and to really, as we flow in that, what to do about or how to be with all that. I have a very dear friend who found out that her ancestral money came from the slave trade.
Mm.
And so to work with that and how it really affects our field.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it affects our field way more than we realize it does. You know, I think as Americans, we really were ushered into this don't look back kind of mindset. You know, for mm-hmm. immigrants that left the old country and came to America, you know, change your name and it's all about, you know, now and the future. And so we've really, as a culture, disregarded our ancestors and disregarded our ancestry. You know, where other cultures, indigenous culture, I think that that the memories and the vibrations of the ancestors are much more acknowledged and recognized.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, even from whether you're looking at it from like a mainstream perspective, or even from like a new age perspective, like we have this sort of new age perspective of like, I create my reality, you know, and this notion that you should be able to create the body of your dreams and, you know, you should be able to manifest money and this, that, and the other. And really that kind of thinking makes you an island. It's like, I'm an all powerful island and I am completely responsible for my life, which is really, you know, I've come to see it's really not true. That we're so strongly influenced by our genetic line and the, you know, if your mother had depression when she was pregnant with you,
mm-hmm.
you were bathed in that vibration from her body. Okay.
Right.
So her, that vibration, which was present in her and depression sounds like, whoa, it's got this like undertone to mm-hmm. it. That is really evident. Now, if her mother was depressed when she was pregnant with her, you know, and maybe it goes back 4 or 5 generations, like who really knows where it came from? But that energetic vibration of depression has been passed along the line. And so you end up depressed and you're like, what's wrong with me? And you think that it's yours. And then you beat yourself up for being depressed, owning it yourself, because you don't realize that you inherited it and that it is encoded in your DNA. Like it is actually part of this inner song that's going on, and that it didn't come from you, you know? And people look at these tendencies that they've inherited, whether it's alcoholism or whether it's anxiety or whether it's fear, and they take ownership of it. And then when they're unable to fix it, then they have a low sense of self-worth because, you know, why can't they get over this thing? And then oftentimes because they can't do anything about it, then they seek to suppress it. And that's when secondary behaviors like eating disorders or, you know, addiction, or, you know, other kinds of self-sabotaging behavior, you know, then become part of it. And it all stacks up. And what's really missing is the understanding and the recognition that it's not your fault. It is a tonal quality that is part of the essential composition that is you in your DNA, in your genes. So, you know, what can you do about it?
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. There's, like I said earlier, there's an actual structure in the field where that information flows. And when I place a tuning fork in it, I can actually affect the tonal quality, affect the song. Like I can get that depression tone to lift up and out and harmonize. I can actually like if you think of it as a stream of energy that's just flowing, by inserting this coherent input into the stream, it harmonizes the stream. And that both goes both upstream and downstream, which means it affects your ancestors. It flows backwards in time. It affects your ancestors. It flows forward in time. It affects your cousins and your offspring. So I think one of the things that may be happening from a science level is there's some research that came out recently where these researchers determined that DNA gets gummed up with a substance called methyl. They call it methylation. And that it seems to, we become methylated when we undergo traumatic experiences. And that once DNA has been methylated in a particular way, it gets replicated that way. And so that this actual methylation may be the contributing like chemical, biological correlation of the tonal things that I'm hearing. And so the tuning seems to demethylate the DNA. Because it can create like what are called Herxheimer reactions or healing crises, where you go through a kind of a detox after a session and you feel you got kind of flu-like symptoms, or you might be producing mucus or be really tired as your body kind of discharges and gets rid of this toxic substance. So that might be part of this energetic thing that I'm noticing and seemingly clearing.
That's really fascinating because I think that's such a tool, and I think it's very interesting with everything else that's going on the planet at this time is that there's a lot of us that are looking for those tools. Like, how do we clear it in both directions? Like, how do we not blame? How do we not do the victim thing? Just how do we clear it multidimensionally?
Like, yeah.
How can we stop this? And I can remember as a child and a young person thinking, but, you know, I know people try to change their habits, but there's something that we can't change. There's got to be some way to change that other stuff that you can't change with your mind. So this is a piece of that answer. It's like with sound.
With sound and with intention and awareness. Yeah. What's so interesting is that so many of my clients who find me, you know, and I've never had a sign. I don't advertise. You know, before my book came out, I was really invisible, you know, hiding in the woods of the mountains of northern Vermont, and have developed a really busy practice here because the process is so effective. But so many people who've managed to find me have said, I have always felt or believed that I'm here to clean up my genetic lineage.
Wow.
Yeah. And they find me and this sound work, and we really do, it really does seem that that is what is going on, which gives me a tremendous amount of hope for humanity, actually.
It's very inspiring, yeah.
Yeah, because underneath the noise is harmony. It's like a perfect harmony in pretty much everybody I've ever worked on. So, you know, we've all been kind of conditioned to think we're guilty sinners. We've fallen from grace. You know, we're not worthy. We can't love ourselves or have compassion on ourselves because we're not good enough. And, you know, that's just a big fat lie, because underneath, people are perfect. So I think we've just, you know, through the history of humanity, picked up a lot of noise and static from a lot of suffering. And, you know, this seems to be an approach to help to just scrub that clean, defragment the collective hard drive, and, you know, kind of reboot.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. And as you were saying that, I thought, well, I'm sure Gaia has her own inner harmony, whatever we've been mucking around up here.
Yeah. You know. No doubt. We've definitely been mucking it up. I've done some work on the earth. I do, there's these telluric currents, these flows of electromagnetic energy that move across the surface of the earth, kind of like rivers. And they're also called dragon lines. The esoteric perspective on it is they're called dragon lines or ley lines.
And they're called telluric?
Telluric currents is the scientific understanding of them.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's the same thing. It's just a different name.
I love that science is finally figuring out how reality works.
Well, you know, they've actually known about telluric currents for a really long time. They powered the early telegraph system on telluric currents. So there's been a scientific understanding about them for a long time, but I think that it's been intentionally hidden.
Uh-huh.
They're very, most people don't know that they exist. So anyway, I've done some work with my tuning forks in those energy flows. I've gone into them and activated the tuning forks and worked to clear the tones in those areas too. So this work can be done on the earth too. Yeah, not just on people.
This has been so fascinating and so exciting, and we've come almost to the end of an hour. And so I want to ask you to talk a little bit about your book, which you mentioned, which I had to laugh because I had it ordered in 3 different places and then found a copy at home. So I thought, well, why don't I just stop ordering it and read it? Maybe I was supposed to give all those other copies away. It's been sort of hectic and it's on the pile by the bed. But if you could talk about
bedside piles.
Yeah. The classes that you teach and the lectures and the book and how do you get forks and what you would do with it if you did do that and your website and all that sort of stuff.
Good. All right. Well, my website is eileenmckusick.com, and on it you can, you know, learn a bit about the method and the services offered. And there's a store where you can order the 4 tuning forks that I use. My tuning forks are actually extra strength tuning forks because I went through a period of breaking my tuning forks. I had such a busy practice, and I'm the first person in the history of therapeutic tuning forks to actually wear them out. And so I was wearing them out pretty significantly and got my manufacturer of the brand that I was using to actually create a special alloy and manufacturing process just for me. Eileen McKusick strength. So these are some of the best quality tuning forks out there. They produce a really superior sound. And I also sell a Canadian hockey pucks, which are the best hockey pucks.
they do it well, right?
I mean, I've tried, you know, doing this for almost 20 years, I've tried just about every manufacturing brand of forks, many different frequencies, many different activation systems, and really do believe that what I'm offering, it gives you the best quality sound of any other options out there. It's really important that you've got a tone that rings strong and clear and lasts a long time, that you can hear the overtones. So because the process of biofield tuning is so simple, my book is one of those rare books that actually teaches you how to do the method. So it isn't just a tease for workshops. Like you can actually read the book and learn it. And then I also made some complimentary instructional videos that are available at my website. So if you just want to learn how to do this on friends and family, you can buy the book, watch the videos, get some tuning forks, and you could actually start using it like for first aid. You know, if a friend or loved one has a headache or a backache or has even anxiety or stressed adrenals, there's enough information there for you to be able to treat them. Or even if you're a massage therapist and you want to try to integrate them a little bit. If you're a professional who wants to integrate this work into a professional practice or even, you know, become exclusively a biofield tuner, I do have a training program. So I do offer hands-on classes that are 3 levels. And in the first one, you learn the basic method and you leave after just a weekend really being able to do this, this field combing process. People are always amazed that like they leave and then, you know, they go practice on people and people are like, oh my God, you got rid of my pain and you helped diminish my anxiety. And, you can be effective right off the bat, which is pretty neat. The book also talks about, you know, in addition to teaching the method, it talks about my story, you know, how I got into healing and why and all of that. And it actually talks about, I had to kind of rewrite our cosmological story, you know, in order for people to have a framework to understand this biofield concept. I had to really kind of get beyond solids, liquids, and gases and add plasma and ether to the cosmological picture in order to have this make sense. So there are some really interesting chapters. Chapters 5 and 6 talk about plasma, which most people don't even know what it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most people think it's blood plasma. It's not. It's the other plasma. So, you know, if listeners want to know what that is, I'll let them go look it up. Or you can read about it in my book. So that's a part of, you know, my research that I'm pretty excited about is the sort of different cosmology. I call it the cosmology of connection. We currently live in a cosmology that believes in separation and everything's dark, dark matter, dark energy, black holes. You know, it's all like scary and dark and separate. And really, you know, in doing my research and seeking to understand what I was encountering with the tuning forks around the body, it led me to a whole new cosmology of light and connection, electric universe theory and ether theory, and really changed my whole outlook in life. So it's a pretty philosophical book too, in addition to being, you know, autobiographical and instructional.
This is so wonderful. And I really love the comprehensiveness of your vision, because I think that's really to follow what engages us and then to allow ourselves to create. And if we have to rethink our whole relationship to the world, then we do.
Yeah, that's what I had to do.
Then we just recreate it. So I did want to say that there are classes in Morrisville this month, San Diego in June, and back in Morrisville in July. And maybe we'll try and invite you out to New Mexico. You want to come to New Mexico and teach a class?
I would love to. I have to add that all of those classes are actually full with waiting lists. and I do have to add more. So I'll be adding more in the fall. The classes fill up. They're small classes. And so, you know, I can only put 10 to 12 people per class. So, you know, I announce them and then they fill up pretty fast. But I would suggest that people sign up for my newsletter. Which you can do at my website. And you can also, I'll be offering these group distance sessions starting in July. And those are just going to be $40 per group of three. So that they're going to be really affordable for people.
And then you do see people in person? And
Don't do that anymore either. Okay. So I've just gotten so busy that... that it became unmanageable. And so I have apprentices now. I have 3 apprentices who are taking, who see people. And I'm just going to be doing this group work for a while.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, that is so exciting. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. I will do what I can to get you a class here because I would love to learn how to do this. And my knee feels totally different.
Does it? Good.
It does. I can feel it feels much more open and the swelling has shifted. And it's quite astonishing.
Excellent.
But yeah, I would really love to work with the energetics because I come from one of those really fascinating families that every generation is really interesting in all directions. So.
Yeah, no doubt. Uh-huh.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Eileen McCusick.